Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to concurrent session 3B, a field guide for actuarial analytics in general insurance. My name is Chow Chow, and I'll be your chair today. In early 2016, a group of seven dedicated, passionate general insurance actuaries working across a range of areas combined forces to start building a general insurance analytics field guide. Five members of this team are here today to present version one of the guide today. Amanda Eichen is director of Actuarial Edge, considers herself a data detective, hunting through data to unearth the best opportunities for her clients. Irene Chen, analyst at Aon Benfield, describes herself as a data forensic analyst, investigating insurance exposure and loss data to discover potential risks. John Connor, product actuary at ANZ, and a data scientist at heart, thrives on combining traditional actuarial models with modern analytical techniques to provide insightful solutions to complex banking and general insurance problems. Jonathan Cohen, senior actuary at Taylor Fry, enjoys working with a wide range of client stakeholders to extract ongoing value from their data assets. And Tanya Wood, associate director at KPMG, is particularly interested in how actuarial and data analysis can support and implement better social outcomes. Would you please join me in welcoming our presenters today?
Thank you, Chow. Field Guide, a book designed to help the reader identify wildlife, plants or animals, or other objects of natural occurrence. I'll be really honest up front, there aren't very many objects of natural occurrence in our field guide, although we do have a chapter on natural hazards, so hopefully that counts. Today we're going to explain what this field guide that we've written is and take you through a demo of the online version of our guide. We'll talk through each of the different sections of the guide and then conclude with some remarks about the role of actuaries going forward in the data analytics area within general insurance. So we believe that data analytics is and always has been a core area of actuarial expertise. However, these days many actuaries are beginning to apply advanced analytical techniques in both traditional and non-traditional areas. Many industries are also very keen to find out how data analytics, sometimes simple analytics is all that's needed, sometimes it can be very advanced, can benefit them and help them achieve their objectives. The purpose of the guide which we've written is to create a knowledge repository for actuaries to be able to share information about data sources, analytical methodologies and tools, and case studies that they've either been involved in or come across in their area of work. At the moment, there are six different sections of the guide, which we'll talk you through today, and each cover these various topics such as data sources, tools and case studies. We've also created an online wiki version of the guide, and we think this is probably the most important part of the guide because we really encourage you to become authors and keep the material up to date and relevant. The guide is, as the title suggests, a roam through the countryside, and it's not necessarily something you want to pick up and read cover to cover. There'll be particular sections that don't appeal to you at all based on your current area of work. So we encourage you just to pick and choose which areas you'd most like to have a look at. So I'll introduce you to the working group behind the guide. There were seven members of the team, myself, Amanda Aitken, Anna Babarina, Irene Chen, Jonathan Cohen, John Connor, Yifan Fu and Tanya Wood. We're from a wide range of different practicing backgrounds and areas of expertise, and that's reflected in the different areas of the guide that have been written so far. I'll apologise now that there are five of us presenting. We'll try to make it as seamless as possible in transitioning between presenters, but we did feel that because it was such a collaborative effort in writing this guide, that it made sense for as many of us to be here as possible. So I'll just show you a short video which demonstrates how to access the guide, how to find different pages within the wiki, and more importantly, how to edit the content yourselves.
Thank you. To access the main page of Wiki, you can use this address here. We'll shortly be adding a link to this address on the Institute's website as well to make it a little bit easier to access. On the main page of the Wikipedia, there's an introduction section, and probably most importantly, there's an area down here that provides a link to each of the subsections of the Wiki. At the moment, we have the subsections pricing, performance monitoring, natural hazards, personal injuries, lender's mortgage insurance, and capital. And hopefully you'll add to these sections over time and create more sections. In order to make an edit within the Wiki, you navigate to the area that you want to edit. For this demonstration, I'm going to go to the capital page. On the capital page, you can see that there are several subsections. There's an introduction, case study one, case study two, a vocab area, and then some references. If I want to edit the data sources under case study two, I just move to that area of the page and click on the edit button. You can see at the moment that we've got a couple of data sources listed, just dummy data sources. If I add some to these, create a third data source. And then once you've finished making any edits that you would like to make, if you scroll to the bottom of the page, there's a Save Page button. So once you click on that, you'll be taken back to the page that you've just edited. And if you navigate to the area that you've edited, you can then see the extra edits that you've made. The other option is to choose the Edit button at the very top of a Wikipedia page, and that will give you the script for the whole page. So then you can navigate to whichever area you want to edit within that script. So in this case, if we just kept scrolling down, we can eventually make our way back to that same data sources section. Once you've finished making all the edits that you'd like to do on a page, you can then access the main page from the top left-hand menu bar, and you'll be taken straight back there again. So as you can see, it's very straightforward to make edits to the Wiki. You can actually log in first, and that way we can track who's made the changes. But as you can see, you can also make the changes without logging in at this point. We strongly encourage you to have a look at the Wiki, edit any existing material and enhance it, and add your own content and ideally your own sections as well, so that we can continue to make sure that this Wiki remains up to date and relevant.
Okay, so that demonstration gave you a very quick overview of what's on the capital section of the Wiki. We'll now talk you through each of the other five sections, starting with personal injuries. So personal injuries is a topic close to my heart, having worked for 12 years at WorkSafe Victoria. And personal injury schemes such as workers' compensation schemes or compulsory third-party motor vehicle schemes often have two key competing aims. One being to improve client recovery and return to health or return to work outcomes, and the other being to ensure the financial sustainability of the scheme. And I see the role of data analytics going forward, or a very key role, in being able to help schemes identify solutions that address both of those aims at the same time, which is not always easy. The research behind the material of this page of the Wiki is based on interviews with 19 different injury schemes in Australia and overseas in 2015. At the moment on the Wiki, we talk about different data sources that the schemes are currently using, and most schemes are already using or are most used to using internal structured data, but some are experimenting with external data and particularly with unstructured data. So, for example, in Canada, the workers' compensation regulator WorkSafe BC is using data mining of news feeds to help them identify new health and safety risks that otherwise may not appear on their radar. We also talk about issues, particularly with different data sources, such as changes in uses of fields over time, which isn't unique. It's not a unique challenge to personal injury schemes. And also converting non-structured data, such as free field text, into usable information. We also looked at the different tools that schemes are using, and the graph that's on this slide, I'm not sure how clear it is for those of you in the back of the room, it lists the different schemes that we interviewed down the side, they're de-identified, and a whole lot of different tools that they're currently using to use data analytics within their schemes, marked with an asterisk in the table. So the table, if you can see it, shows that Excel and SAS and tools like that that are a bit more traditional are still very popular, but other tools such as R, ClickView and Tableau are becoming more popular. Finally, on the wiki, we talk about different applications of data analytics within these schemes, such as TAC's regression analysis to help them more effectively manage common law claims, and AXA UK's fraud identification to find pockets of fraud within motor garages in the UK. For any of you in the room who have experience working in this area, and I can see a few of you, I'd encourage you to get onto this page, add some other applications, so particular areas that you've been able to use data analytics to help achieve scheme outcomes. And I think it'd also be great to start a listing of different data sources that have been used, particularly new data sources or external data sources that others may not have thought of to use, and how you've used them and how that's been successful, or even some of the challenges that you've faced in using those data sources. So I'll now pass to Irene to talk about the natural perils section of the guide.
Thank you, Amanda. Sorry, I have to speak seated because there are too many of us up here. So today I would like to share with you how we could use data analytics for property insurance pricing and underwriting, especially quantifying natural perils risks. So unlike normal property claims where we may have a burst pipe or broken window, which may lead to an angry wife and then result in some casualty claims, natural perils are more difficult to estimate or price for because, A, an earthquake usually impacts thousands of houses at one time, so the claims are not independent, and B, catastrophes don't happen every day, and so we have very little data points to look at. And as a result, traditional actuarial pricing techniques don't work very well, and that's when we turn to other methods. Use bushfire as an example. Imagine that we have this massive database like Google Earth that has all the locations of the properties inside the database. And then we add the vegetation types, and then we add the information, and then we add the geographical information such as the angle of the slope, the distance to bush, and then we can combine this big database with some loss curves that developed by scientists and researchers to calculate the expected loss cost or the risk premium for bushfire, and it's down to a property, an individual property location resolution instead of doing it on a portfolio basis. And this is amazing. And in fact, a lot of the information is already out there. All we need to do is to join the dots and start looking at this kind of problem at a different angle. And I haven't mentioned the funny maps on the screen here. So on your left-hand side is a map of distant individual properties distance to bush. And this shows how we're not only able to quantify the risks, but also visualize them. So historically, 75 to 95% of the properties destroyed in a big bushfire have been within 100 meters of bush. By using this map, the insurers are able to identify the key exposures and, say, for example, implement some risk management measures. For example, send out alerts to specific customers during the bushfire seasons. So in summary, there are a whole range of exciting things that we'll be able to do with those data, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you are already doing it. So I strongly recommend you to go onto the wiki page that Amanda mentioned before and start adding your contribution to it. And next, I'll hand over to Tania to talk about performance monitoring.
Thanks, Irene. So performance monitoring is very important to all organizations. and general insurers are already collecting large amounts of internal data in their data warehouses and increasingly collecting more and more external data to supplement their analysis. In terms of modelling performance, traditionally, it has very much been on single variate analysis and usually after the event. So, for example, you will see your performance report, which will detail the gross premium written in the last month, the rate change achieved in that premium, and maybe a comparison against your business forecast. More advanced analytics is focusing on becoming more truly embedded in the organization and providing faster and more real-time insights. So, for example, allowing detection of claims fraud at an earlier stage in the process. Visualization techniques and outputs are increasingly being used and valued to help understand portfolios and your policyholders. Just put up on the screen here an example of some of the visualization output that you can get from Tableau. And this demonstrates how you can interrogate your data by multiple variables simultaneously. So if you look at the bottom graph, you can see along the horizontal axis, I've detailed the number of policies written by the location of the policyholder, but also by the age demographic of the policyholder. And on the vertical axis, the different colors represent the different distribution channels that those policies were written through. One of the advantages of using more advanced analytics is that the user is not constrained to predetermined key performance indicators, but rather they can decide where in their business they need to drill down and get further information, and that will help them then define and refine those key performance indicators to be more tailored to their needs. There are many areas that you can monitor performance. One application could be in the monitoring of retention levels, and then this analysis could feed into how you contact your customer optimally. So when is the best time to reach out to your customer and offer cross-sell or upsell opportunities which will have the highest impact? So the wiki page to date details some of these applications and some of these elements, but I'd like to evolve that over time as people use it more. I'm now going to hand over to John, who's going to speak through Lenders Mortgage Insurance.
Thanks, Sonia. So Lenders Mortgage Insurance, just to give you a bit of context, is a type of insurance that protects the lender if the borrower actually defaults, and it tends to apply to loan-to-value ratios where it's greater than 80%. There's about four major players in the market, and it can give a capital relief for, depending on what type of the financial institution is. I suppose I'll talk from my own personal experience after working for some of the LMI lenders mortgage insurance in the market, that some of the key challenges you have with this line of business is the relatively benign economic experience in Australia. So, you know, in terms of data analytics, some of the key systematic risks you need to capture is the economy, because the mortgages are generally very related to unemployment, interest rates, inflation, house prices can affect claim sizes. So on the wiki, I've gone through and explained what type of problems you have and challenges you have. So one example is the arrears management process in a bank, and this would be the same for a general insurance company with how they manage claims. So you have to be very cautious around the claims management process and any changes over time and any legislative changes that have impacted the claims rate or default rates over time. So I've put up on the screen here two case study examples which are on the wiki. The first one was an analytical technique to get high-risk regions identified in Sydney. And don't worry, this is just fictitious data, so for all your Sydney sellers out there, they're not hotspots, so don't worry. So the first one uses internal data with external property data and ABS data. So it uses the Social Economic Index, which is an index produced by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And the data has been spatially smoothed to identify high-risk regions. And you can do this to kind of influence policy and strategy for the company. The second one is the reinsurance optimization. So this is a technique which was done in SAS, which, you know, tries to strip out idiosyncratic risk, which is associated with the loan, so the age of the borrower and, you know, how much they're actually lending, and the systematic risk, which is the state of the economy. And you can make this stochastic by putting in an economic scenario generator. So the model is effectively a Markov chain with stochastic variables going in, and you kind of get a loss distribution then, and you can set your risk appetite based on that and effectively your reinsurance. So I'll pass you over to Jonathan now.
Thanks, John. Short tail pricing, it's a pretty big topic, and it's an area that's probably fair to say is in flux at the moment or in change. A lot of insurers looking at change in the way they do things using more modern analytics techniques. Probably the other side of the change is that the role of the pricing actuary or price within an insurer is becoming more interconnected to different parts of the business. So having to work more with IT and marketing, et cetera, to sort of drive pricing strategies that align with the business. So sort of given this, it was sort of figured it's pretty hard for an actuary starting out in pricing to know how all of that fits together. And the main goal of this part of the wiki, as it stands at the moment, is to talk about the business considerations that a pricing actuary would need to go through in figuring out sort of the right level of detail to go into for a pricing exercise. So there's lots of things you can do, put on a technical scale from no-nonsense to whiz-bang. Where you sit on that scale tends to relate a lot more to business constraints than to analytical constraints. Sort of really big constraints like what your pricing engine can handle and the sorts of variables that are already available, the cost of getting new information in there at the point of pricing. So we've gone and put some details in there on the considerations you need to go through. One of the I sort of got some boxes there on sort of a pricing exercise. So getting started, understanding your business environment and the market, et cetera. This is the same now as it always was, except there's a few more tools at your disposal on the analysis side. There's constraints around systems, distribution channels. So if you're selling direct or if you're white labeling a product through a different distributor, there's a different degree of flexibility you can have in your pricing. Lead time for pricing changes is a sort of another big one. If you can put updates to your rates in overnight, then you can be a lot more agile in what you do. If it takes you a year, then your first pricing exercise is going to have to be really good because you're not going to get another chance for another year to update your rates. In terms of building the model, one thing that is becoming increasingly important with sort of a preponderance of external data sets is understanding whether each predictor that you're adding to your model or to your pricing is actually adding enough to justify its cost. So that's both the direct cost of any payments to third-party providers and also indirect costs in the event that adding that to your model means that you have to ask another question on the quote form, for instance. And we know that the more questions we ask on a quote form, the less likely it is that a customer makes it all the way through and you sort of lose them high up the funnel before you even get a chance to offer them a price. And then sort of implementing your rates and making sure you can use it. One of the great things about machine learning techniques is you can fit models really quickly, and they tend to perform reasonably decently. One of the not so great things is that the scorecode that they produce can often be very long. So for a GBM model, for instance, you could be looking at several thousand of lines of code. And getting that into your pricing engine, if you've got an online interface and having that able to provide prices fast enough to meet performance requirements, can be a challenge. And sometimes you end up having to look at model compression techniques just by virtue of trying to get that scorecode size down. So that's sort of a snapshot of a few things in short tail pricing that a new actuary in the area would sort of need to get their head around. We've got a few more on the wiki. Love some more to be added. In terms of what we've spoken about, I think we've all sort of said it'd be really great for everyone to add to the wiki. We sort of went out with a call for participants through the GIPC newsletter, and we got sort of 7 people, which was great. And if we can grow it from there and build a community around it, that would be even better. Wikis are of most use when lots of people participate and lots of people edit, and it becomes a self-supporting and editing thing. On the other side, you know, how do you get involved with analytics in a general insurer? We've sort of spoken about five topics today. There's sort of at least 10 or 20 more that we could have spoken about that we haven't spoken about. There's a lot of areas in general insurers that are starting up. Several insurers have labs now that are doing analytics. And there's a real risk that actuaries get marginalized in this process, and I think it's sort of important that we try to highlight, first of all, get involved in other areas of the business and highlight the unique skills that we bring. So caring about validating the data, not just that there is data, you know, is it the right data, understanding how it fits in with the business, knowing what the assumptions underlying it are, so it's not just about fitting a model and confirming that, yeah, there's numbers that come out, and you know, the numbers are in the right format to meet the system requirements. It's more about, you know, does it actually do what we want it to do? And taking a long-term view, so it's not just about the next financial year, it's about how it's going to affect the portfolio or the business on a long-term basis. I think sort of uniquely within the data science community within Australia, we do have a professional body and are held to professional standards, and that does mean something. So Amanda sort of showed a video before about editing the wiki. We'd love you all to go online and have a look at it. It'd be fantastic if you start a new section and start talking about that. If you'd like to contribute to one of the existing sections, that'd be great too. So we've got contact details. I flicked my screen and... There we go. Contact details for all of us. If there's a particular section we've spoken about today that you're, you know, really keen on, passionate about, working, want to get involved with, then, you know, please contact one of us, or just hop on and start editing.
And I guess the last thing as well is none of us are necessarily going to be able to answer all the questions you have, technical questions about the wiki, but please start with us and we'll explore, you know, if you're having trouble editing it or accessing it for some reason or something, shoot one of us an email and we'll try and help out.
Thank you very much. Now time for questions. May I please remind you to please speak into the microphone because the session is recorded, and please announce your name before you ask a question. And before you leave today, please complete your presented feedback forms on the app, GIS 2016. Now, do I have a question from the floor?
Come on.
All right, I will... Good.
It's Daniel from Quantium. So, I mean, it's a great idea, but one question is, what can be shared, what cannot be shared? Obviously, a lot of innovative things each of us do might be an IP for our own companies. So, the guideline on what kind of things and to what level can we share on the wiki?
I think that's a question that we grappled with a lot to start with. So the seven of us were really keen to put information into the guide, and then we all got started writing, and then we started to send emails back and forth. Oh, I don't know if I can write on that topic anymore because my employer won't let me share that information. I don't know if there's a good answer. I would have thought it just comes down to the information that you're wanting to share, who owns that information, and are they comfortable with it being on the wiki. So it is a challenge. I understand different industries might face that challenge differently. I think in personal injuries where it's a government monopoly scheme, they might be more willing to share examples of things that they've done or things they've tried that haven't worked so well. For a private insurer, they may not be so comfortable to put that information up. I'd be interested in any thoughts you have as well about how we could get around some of those issues, or because obviously the more that we can share with each other, the more we can learn from each other, but you know, we can't encroach on IP as well.
I guess on the related question, would you give an outline of how wikis work, sort of the commercials or the sort of philosophies underpinning wikis, and how do we apply that in sort of a professional sense like we are here today?
I'm gonna go.
I guess it's another thing we spoke about, whether we try to restrict authorship to members of the Institute or try to have administrators. And at the end, we just sort of ended up with, it's better just to have an open system and everyone edits. And I think, as I mentioned before, wikis work well when lots of people participate and they become self-regulating things. And just to your question also, I think there's a lot you can say without going into commercial specifics. So there's a lot of interest in machine learning techniques at the moment, and there's a difference between a Kaggle competition and a business setting, and sort of what's sensible and works in winning a Kaggle comp is not necessarily the right thing for a business setting. And I think there's a lot of that business side that you can write about in generic terms. So you know, if you're fitting models, you know, what sort of considerations would you go to if you said, I want to have an ensemble of five models? And what's your threshold for accepting that this is a sensible and realistic thing to do for a business? Or if you fit in a particular type of model, what are the gotchas and the things to look out for there that that aren't really an issue in other settings? So one of the big ones for gradient boosting machines, for instance, is the predictions they give are pretty wobbly, and they can go up and down. And if you fit in a pricing model that has sum insured in it, for instance, you don't want your relation between sum insured and price to be negative. And you know, pointing out that that's something you should think about and mitigate for is probably not commercially sensitive. Saying these are the exact variables we used and how we tuned it probably is. Yeah, there's sort of a balance there.
Questions?
I'd be really interested, actually, if I can ask a question. Could I have a show of hands of who thinks, honest? I'm happy for an honest answer, who thinks they might get online after this session and have a look or even have a go at editing the wiki?
I've already had a look.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Okay, great.
So probably tell us about how it works. You know, how does a wiki work? What do people have to do? How do people make edits? And what's the process around the techniques around wikis?
So I guess the first thing is to have a look and see if you agree with the material that's already on there. And my understanding of how a wiki works is that if you read something that you don't think is right, you correct it and you put what you think is the right answer up. Potentially then someone comes and corrects that and changes what you've posted. But that gets back to what John was saying, that I think the most effective wiki will be one with a really big audience that are active and continually making their own changes.
Yeah, and I'd say it's incredibly easy to correct and change on there, and I suppose that's the approach we're going for. The easier it is, the more people will edit things, and the more people get involved, the more it'll converge to the single source of truth that should be. You know, if you change something on Wikipedia now, there's so many people on it that it will probably revert back to what the true version of that is, and that's what the goal is of this wiki.
Hi, Nikki Appleton. Thanks for that. It's really interesting to hear about it. I confess I haven't looked at it yet, but I will do. Will it have the... Do you envisage it'll have a Q&A section so that if I'm sort of thinking if you're learning to code in R and you're wanting to do a specific thing, would it facilitate putting a question, I want to do this in R, can somebody help me with the code? Is that something that you envisage might cater for, or is it more really what people have done?
I suppose the section I showed about spatial smoothing on the slide gives a link to another presentation elsewhere that explains how to do that. So, you know, rather than getting too big and too technical, you could link other sources that would give you that. So, but in terms of Q&A, we've not really thought about that, actually, but that's a good suggestion in terms of the Q&A section. So if anyone can help, yeah.
Yeah, I'll just add a little bit on that. And currently, we're having these wiki pages exactly like the formats that we have, like Wikipedia. So it's a description of the topic, based on the data source and say, case studies and, for example, the methodologies and so on and so forth. But I think that's a very good, suggestion that we have something like more like a forum or a community that people can ask questions and stimulate ideas and everything. So, which we might think about and going into that route, but currently we are having pages of descriptions of each topics more in the Wikipedia format instead of a Q&A or forum kind of format.
Questions? I have a question in terms of around the topics covered in the wiki. Is it going to be sort of a information base, or is it more sort of other topics as well? So, for example, education, different courses, or, you know, clubs and meet, you know, associations that people can organise themselves on the wiki. Is that an option?
That's an excellent idea. I think you should take that to council, Chow, and suggest that we expand beyond general insurance. We did talk about whether we should set the wiki up to be more general so that other actuarial topics could be added over time as well. I think it's a great idea. If this does actually work and people use it and keep it relevant, then it would be good to expand it to other topic areas as well.
I suppose it depends on the purpose. We initially had the purpose that someone new to the industry can pick it up and get an idea of what data, what challenges, what techniques are available within that product line, and that's the objective we've gone for, but yeah, it could expand. Yeah.
And actually, I know we've shown a copy to the Life and Wealth Management Practice Committee as well, just as a suggestion of what we've tried, and I guess we'll keep them and other practice committees updated. No, I don't know if we actually said that this originated from the General Insurance Practice Committee, so three of us are on GIPC and said, oh, this might be a good way to start sharing information with members, and then we had other volunteers join the working group as well. So yeah, certainly something we should discuss with other practice committees also.
Questions or thoughts from the floor? How many of us have used Wikipedia in the past or made edits or drawn information from it? Just a show of hands. Everyone. And so this is a fantastic idea, I think, that we can have something with everyone participating in it, either drawing information from it or contributing to it, that can build a community within itself. And it's all about everyone, you know, participating in the wiki movement, I think, that makes this successful. Any other comments or questions?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, good idea.
It's a very high exchange rate.
Okay, I think we may have an early finish today. Please put our hands together for the presenters today.